Good evening, America, and welcome back to another episode of Young Democracy. I'm your host, Everett Smith. This week, we decided to do a collaboration between me and my roommate, Asher. So if you haven't checked out the first part of this episode, you can catch it on the Debate Without Debate podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Asher and I talk about what it's been like to be at college for a few weeks and be totally disconnected from any kind of news media. So it's a really interesting conversation. I hope you check it out. And in this episode, we'll be talking about six news stories that we pulled up and researched for each other so that we could get back up to date, and you'll hear our thoughts about that. So I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
Should we talk about the news?
Let's go back to our original point of conversation.
Yeah.
Y'all will probably hear more from us of these types of conversations because we have a lot of ideas.
We go off. We have the best conversations.
It'll be like really far too late for us to be up, and we'll just be like, yo, what about this concept? Like, what do you think about this? And those are good conversations. I'm starting to think we should be recording those as well.
Actually, we could just like we could get a room mic, not a cardioid.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just an area.
That'd be really funny. All right, let's switch gears. So, my thought for this, and Everett, if you want to add anything to the process that I was thinking about for this. Actually, this is your idea. Why would I even say it? Yeah, why don't you give the idea?
All right. So what we were thinking about for this episode was that because we've been totally out of the loop in terms of news for like a week, each of us would come with one or two news stories that we'd read a little bit about, present them to the other. We can trade off one by one.
Yeah, like
and
that,
then
yeah.
We can dig in and discuss what we think the implications are.
It's basically you get our first reaction to the news.
Yeah.
Which I guess is an interesting experience because we have so much stuff thrown at us 24/7, and now we can actually digest it. Everett, why don't you start off?
All right, I will begin. And this is something I heard like whispers about on campus, but I hadn't like gone in and done any of the details, and I didn't really know what was going on. Here, I'll bring it up real quick. In essence, Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who I keep calling Boris Yeltsin by mistake.
USSR?
Yeah,
and
right?
Russia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson has suspended the UK Parliament.
What?
Yeah. So I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe October 31st is the scheduled Brexit date.
Oh, great.
So UK Parliament is tasked with coming up with a deal, passing a piece of legislation.
Which they probably won't do.
Right? To make a great deal for the United Kingdom with the European Union. And Boris Johnson has chosen to suspend UK Parliament for 2 or 3 weeks. So they have under 10 days now to put things together, and then they have like 2 to 3 weeks after the suspension is over to put things together. And what's really fun about UK parliamentarian rules is because he suspended parliament, that means everything that's on the table right now is going to be thrown out.
Wow.
In like 6 days.
It's
and they're
going to
start from fresh.
Wow.
Yeah, they're going to start from fresh. And they've got like 3 weeks to pass this deal that they've been trying to do for like over like a year.
That happens
right,
in
like
our Congress as well.
Right, since the Donald got elected. Yeah. Like, it's been 3 years. We can't do it.
Yeah.
Now they've got 3 weeks.
It happens in our Congress. Like, in the House of Representatives, especially the turnover rate with the 2 years, you have a new chamber for Congress every 2 years, and you have to re-propose bills. So, like, for example, Bernie and a few other people who have co-sponsored it have put back into the chamber the Medicare for All bill, which he's been pushing for a very, very long time. I don't know when the bill was actually created, but he put it again up for makes a new bill. It's really interesting to think about how many bills we have that are proposed.
No one
like
hears
thousands,
about them.
But only a select few comparatively get passed.
Very few get passed, and very few get media attention.
Mm.
We almost never talk about a lot of the important legislation that hits the Congress floor.
Yeah.
Such that I can't even think of an example, right?
Like, I know H.R. 1. H.R. 1 was, like, about...
What is that?
It's every time that there's a new chamber, they try and set the tone by picking a piece of legislation that will represent what their main mission is, and it was all about basically elections and gerrymandering and lobbying, stuff that I personally think is very important.
Yeah. Very passionate.
But this Boris thing, is that even constitutional? Like, they have a constitutional monarchy, yes. I know that. So did they have to go to the Queen?
He did go to the Queen.
Oh my.
And asked for permission to suspend Parliament.
Can you imagine that scene?
She did grant permission to suspend Parliament, wow. So I don't know the intricacies of British culture or British politics about how much leverage she actually had in that situation. But part of what I'm really interested in is so many of the promises that I think the Leave campaign was founded upon, it seems, are starting to get thrown out the window in favor of leave at all costs.
Yeah, they
leave
want that
hard
exit.
Matter what. Yeah, so that's...
That's dangerous, though, for a global economy that relies so much on each other.
The thinking is that Johnson and the Conservative Party, although there are a lot of Conservative dissenters, right?
Yes,
there are a lot of dissenters,
yes.
Dissenting MPs in Parliament, that they're trying to get a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah.
And I don't know what their strategy is with that, why they think that's a good idea. But a lot of what the Leave campaign was founded upon was this idea of, by leaving, we can work out a better deal than we have right now with the EU Parliament.
That's so weird. The logic is just...
Basic, no, like, it made sense in the beginning.
I guess.
Right? To a lot of the people who voted, it was... Listen, we need to play
hardball too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't a landslide victory in favor. I remember a lot of millennials, especially, were very angry because they receive a lot of benefits. I think from having Britain be a part of the EU, like they can go to school anywhere in the EU, they can work wherever they want in the EU. They don't have to have like green cards, I think, as well. So free, basically, better trade deals as well.
Yeah, you
and
can
old
work
people,
anywhere
old
people, in the European
I think,
Union.
Personally, I think Brexit has been a question of the same thing we're dealing with in the United States about immigration. A lot of people, from what I've read, are disappointed by the fact that there are jobs being taken, for example, by Polish people. They'll come, they'll take jobs that many people might not want to take. And so now white old folk believe that they're taking jobs, stealing jobs away from themselves, their country. It's this very nativist, populist idea. Personally, it frightens me that Boris Johnson received enough support to become prime minister, because to me it indicates that right-wing populism, the focus on like the common person, which in theory is a good idea, but when it is a right-wing concept, it gets manipulated into xenophobia and a hatred of immigrants is what we're seeing right now. To me, Boris Johnson indicates that stuff's still going on, and that's a red flag in my mind for our election in the United States. Donald Trump in no way, by no means, was the first of his kind in his form of politics. For example, Viktor Orban in Hungary, I believe that's correct, was in power prior to Donald Trump, I think in like 2012. He's very similar, has an authoritarian streak. Bolsonaro in Brazil, right? Authoritarian streak. It's showing that these seemingly progressive nations that are supposed to be quote-unquote leading the world are reverting back to fundamentally exclusionary practices, and that makes me a little scared. Like, there was one of the headlines that I read, and I guess we can swing this way. I didn't actually look that much into this, but I've seen it, is that U.S. military officials, their children who are born on naval or military or at any type of base, the Trump administration has now said that they might not receive citizenship simply because they were born in another country, even though technically that is American soil, right? Like, people are born in embassies or near embassies, and embassies are technically a part of that country. Like, the really cool thing I think about being in a place like DC or New York is there are embassies there, and you can literally travel to 200 countries in a single day if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's the only that's place funny. You could do that, right? Where there are a bunch of consulates and embassies, stuff like that. So it's stuff like that. It's fundamentally an exclusionary practice. Those people are serving our country over broad, like overseas.
Yeah.
I combined the two. It's all good.
Right.
It's so weird to see that now happening. And mind you, exclusion's been happening since the beginning of America's existence. But it's a daunting concept to see how vocal people are to have exclusive policies and exclusive agendas.
Yeah, man, I think it's really, really tough. I think it's very tough building a society that is strong enough to be inclusive and. Like, I don't think it's right to lump all of the conservatives, especially in Britain and even in the United States, together. And I think, like, part of the problem is that conservatives have been so alienated culturally, and, like, conservative values make so little sense to a lot of young Americans that... Mm. They assume that they're entirely irrational and totally useless and totally hate-filled. And I think we have a responsibility to separate what is valuable in conservatism and learn to live with it and learn to make it inclusive and learn to make it democratic and learn to make it reasonably egalitarian and equitable and serve social justice. Because I think there's a lot of wisdom that people on the left that we throw everything out because of the association with hatefulness and with exclusivity. And I think we need to learn to separate what is reasonable conservatism from what is totally a threat to minority groups or to immigrants or to refugees or to the democratic process in general or to ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a lot of alt-right stuff. There's a lot of right populism that's an existential threat to people who have been dealing with oppression in the West for hundreds of years. And there's a lot of conservatism, alt-right stuff, even mainline conservatism that is upholding oppressive institutions.
Yeah.
And that needs to be reformed.
I agree.
But like, at the same time, I empathize with the feeling in the British public that global capitalism has left us behind and we want control of our government back.
Yeah.
We want the people to decide. We don't care who the people are, but we want what is safe, what is comfortable. We want democracy. We want control. And I'm afraid that this parliamentary move to suspend parliament is an indication that that is not what the Leave campaign is ready to give people, and that actually things are becoming less democratic.
Yeah.
And the British people are having less control and less say in their fate than what they were promised and certainly what they deserve.
Yeah.
Like, I got to go to Scotland recently, and that was like really cool. I was privileged to do that. And the vast majority of Scotland voted to stay in the European
Union.
That
was a big to-do as well, right? Because they thought that Scotland is going to stay in while Britain will leave.
Yeah, yeah. England and Wales. And what's so interesting, I think, is like the Scottish independence vote, like a huge reason why... A huge reason for part of the Scottish population to campaign to stay in the United Kingdom, right? Because Scotland had a secession vote from the UK, right? Okay. They were going to leave.
Yeah.
And the whole stay campaign was like, we can't leave the European Union.
Mm.
Like, we don't want to do that.
Mm.
And now, like, the Scottish people certainly aren't having a say in government. The Scottish people certainly don't get to control the government. They haven't taken control back, right? And, like, I don't know what to do, man, because we keep the British keep flip-flopping back and forth on the Brexit issue, on when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. And I think it's like, I'm afraid that it's going to start creating tears. And I imagine it probably already has.
Sure.
In the social fabric.
Sure.
Because they can't resolve this conflict.
Hmm. In positive news, though, if you're if you're done with this topic, NPR has reported that the U.S. appeals court in Chicago has yet again upheld that an assault weapons ban is constitutional. Interesting process. The Supreme Court in 2012 denied looking at a case very similar to this one. Case details you can find on NPR, but the gist of it is it was in Cook County, and they've upheld that regulations on large capacity assault weapons are basically, if you have regulations on them, it does not violate the Second Amendment. It does not, they literally say in it, it does not, quote, does not imperil any law regulating firearms. So I think this is a positive move. It's a good signal. Obviously, the Seventh Circuit is slightly more liberal than other circuits are, given that there are a lot of urban hubs. However, it's cool to see that three judges on an appeals court have said, like, enough is enough. We've seen too many mass shootings, one of them very close to us. We gotta end it somehow. So, I mean, it's a good sign because maybe, just maybe, if they appeal it again, it goes up to the Supreme Court, get a vote on that. Not totally sure that with a majority conservative bench now, we would be able to pass something that would basically reinstate an assault weapons ban that happened in the late 1990s into the 2000s. But what do you think about this move, Everett? You have a bit of experience also in gun violence activism, am I right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I've been fortunate to never experience gun violence, but, like, that's what got me into political activism and got me into the media side of that. I think because I realized, and a lot of the people I was working realized that in order to keep a movement going and keep activists in the field, you need media and communications infrastructure tied to that, right? Like, when youth activism gets playtime in the news, more activists come out.
Because they see other people are doing it, and they're like, if they can do it, I can too.
Yeah, exactly, right? Which is one of the reasons why I think social media and, like, media manipulation can be a super scary thing for democracy, and we should be very careful about that.
In terms of the court,
I mean, I think the decision's interesting. Like, I personally believe in an assault weapons ban, as do almost all of the liberals and conservatives I've talked to want an assault weapons ban.
Interesting. Even the conservatives you speak to.
Mostly the conservatives.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, there were studies, and again, you can be skeptical of studies because they're not totally representative.
And you've got to be careful about who's funding them.
Exactly. But there were studies that showed that a majority of Americans were in support of basic things like universal background checks, something like above 90%. Some reports say upwards of 97% of Americans agree with that. They even have a majority, I believe, for an assault weapons ban, right? And for me, it's disconcerting that just a few blocks away from us, literally.
We should go see.
I mean,
we should go give them a word,
man. I wonder if it's
open
to the public at all. Like, if
we should record episodes in the Capitol building.
Well, I mean, maybe we could, like, if we get an interview with a representative, U.S. representative or senator.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool. But right down the street from us, they are incapable of passing things that all people agree with. Well, not all people, but a vast majority.
A lot of people. The majority, which is, you know, in some senses what democracy is founded on, is like the consent of the masses. And the masses are asking for something, and you're not consenting to give it to them. Mm. So I think that's probably like a really good thing, because it seems to make sense to me, and I don't have the data to back it up right now, but it seems like an effective solution, at least partially effective for the problem. It seems like it doesn't infringe too highly on the rights of Americans, and I think. Like I think the right's biggest argument for gun control is a slippery slope argument. That if you give an inch,
they love slippery slope arguments.
Everybody loves slippery slope arguments,
They're a fallacy for a reason.
Yep.
Like they're a logical fallacy. Like that's number one. So I loved making that argument when I used to do debate, because it's very compelling. It's like one thing leads to another, which leads to another, which leads to another. And all of a sudden, we're all dead.
But all that argument leads to is, like, let's not ever do anything,
it's
which is not an option,
yes.
Right? And for any of the listeners who don't know, like, slippery slope argument is arguing that giving in an inch to the opposing side, agreeing to moderate in any sense, empowers the opposing side to take everything that you really care about. Yeah. So it empowers you to fight for things that you don't actually believe in, because they're a buffer. They protect you from the other side taking what you deeply care about.
True.
And I think an assault weapons ban is a very good counter to the slippery slope argument, because it's a relatively clear line between assault weapons and advanced magazines and rapid fire weapons. It's very clear where those end and where other weapons begin.
You think so? I think a lot of people make the argument that in this piece that I was reading, there was a bit of criticism of the decision, that basically the argument was the definition of an assault weapon was broad enough where semi-automatic weapons could also be banned, because there's technically a separate class.
You're saying semi-automatic weapons could not be banned, or could be banned
along with the assault weapons.
Admittedly, I don't have a problem with semi-automatic weapons being banned,
but I
get that it's you know.
I mean, I think that's
it's
part
a problem
of, that's
for some,
part of the really hard
aspect
of these bans is making sure that you are very precise in the way that you define it,
yeah,
and in the way that you implement the policy, right? Like the bills can be hundreds of pages long. In some cases, they literally look ridiculous, like the tax code. I don't know if you've seen videos of there were representatives that were like, what are these tax codes? Like, you are literally writing in pencil along the sides of it because you are trying to push it through before we go into recess.
Yeah. Have you ever seen videos of people taking chainsaws and cutting through the tax code, and it's like 3 feet high?
Wow.
Yeah, that's some political theater right there, man.
That's very true. You're very into that. You have another thing that you want to inform me about?
I had another thing. So, up next in the news, recession.
Interesting. So, I have heard about this, but do you want to explain a little bit? Because I heard you had an explanation from one of your professors
already.
Yeah,
one of my professors, what's been receiving a lot of buzz is the idea of an inverse yield curve.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I don't 100% understand it. It's a lot of, like, if anyone's taken AP economics, it's like securities market. It's U.S. Treasury bonds, right? And the Federal Reserve and interest rates. But in essence, the idea is that U.S. bonds are trading right now in a way that indicates everyone buying them believes that there is more risk in the short term than there is in the long term.
Hmm.
When you buy U.S. bonds, they're more valuable the longer you buy them for, right? So if you want to buy them for 6 months, they're going to pay off very little. It's a very small investment, right? If you buy them for 10 years, they're going to pay off a lot more. Mm. And the reason you do that, the principle in business is you take more risk, you deserve more reward.
Yeah.
And because anything could happen in 10 years, or like a recession could happen in 10 years, you could die in 10 years, like inflation could skyrocket in 10 years. Because there's so much uncertainty, the payoff is a lot bigger.
Sure.
And recently, the yield curve has inverted so that the payoff in the short term, in the next year, 2 years, is higher than it is for 5 years or 10 years.
Okay, so basically, that was a very concise way of explaining it.
Thank you. The investors believe that there is very big risk right now. And what I think is interesting, and my professor went on to say, like, he believes that it's the trade war and it's the Trump tweets, and that every time Trump makes a tweet, the investment markets, like, shake. They freak
out.
That's
so weird, by the way, like, swinging back to what we said before. Our politics, like, I think I've said this before, Twitter, the best thing that ever happened to Twitter was Donald Trump tweeting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, can you imagine how many more politicians are on there now knowing that they can roast the president? Which, by the way, is the weirdest concept and a very bad precedent in my mind.
Roasting the president on Twitter?
Yeah.
Why? Break that down for me.
I just think he's made a bit of a mockery of what the presidency really is. And my fear is that right now there are dissenting voices on the conservative side, but predominantly on the left side, that will, like, nitpick his tweets, right? And because for some reason, and like, CNN's using, in MSNBC and Fox, they're all using his tweets as if they're legitimate policies, which I despise.
As if they're worthy of being talked about.
Exactly. And I think it's a terrible precedent, because then it makes us hyper aware of every single little thing that people say. And people say things very rashly sometimes. Right? Like, very spontaneously. And this actually ties into one of the things that the next topic. So there's a hurricane coming to the United States right now.
Yeah.
It's Hurricane Dorian. It's potentially a Category 4 hurricane to Florida. They're expecting 7 days, about a week, without electricity. I believe it may have already hit Puerto Rico. I only briefly read through the article, but Axios reported that Donald Trump, in meetings about this emergency, what it really is, said, why don't we just nuke it? Why can't we just send a nuke into the hurricane and destroy it?
You
want
to nuke the hurricane?
That sounds like potentially the worst idea I've ever heard.
It sounds like it's from Sharknado, man.
Oh, my God. You
That's
are so
like,
right.
Maybe the Donald watched Sharknado over the weekend, and he was like, he walked into the meeting Monday morning, and they were like, sir, there's a hurricane. Like, thousands of people could die. And he's like, guys, I have a plan. I have a great plan.
Nuke it.
All right. I was briefed over the weekend on a strategy by Sharknado. Have you seen it? It's a great film.
Oh, my God. But like, there were, like, three reports of that happening.
Dude, I think the what makes me go crazy is we're all watching the tweets, and that dude's getting legislation passed. That dude is writing executive orders.
Honestly?
Like, there's stuff happening
that no one's talking about. It's all a facade.
Because he's, like, just writing the tweets, and he knows they'll, like get everybody.
Is it not a genius strategy in a way? Like, you basically distract your opponents. There's so many things to criticize him about that you don't have a unified strategy, right? There's so
but
many things.
They can't criticize him for all of it. Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. It's almost like he's doubled down on a lot of different cards. Like, he's doubled down on his racism card. He's doubled down in 2016 even on a sexism card. Like, a bunch of different stuff. But it's almost as if the more he does it, the better he can secure another election.
Well, dude, I think the biggest mistake, like, people made in our political system, at least with regards to the Donald, is believing that he's not smart. All right? Like,
and believing that he couldn't win.
Yeah.
Fundamental and misconception.
Like, yeah, believing that this bumbling thing, that like this rashness, that this TV personality, right, that that's an indication that he's not intelligent. No, dude. Like, that's an indication that he's deeply intelligent and he's playing everybody.
Mm.
All right? Like, he's got you distracted thinking he's an idiot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's meeting with people. He's getting stuff done. He's, like, reshaping the political system. And on the conservative side, all everybody ever hears about is how the leftists and the liberals and the Democrats keep focusing on the stupid stuff.
Yeah.
All right? And the conservatives are like, he's rewriting the rules of trade.
So here's the biggest thing that I have for fear-wise, right? I am actually much more afraid of Mitch McConnell than I am of Donald Trump. Because that man's been in the Senate for a while, and he blocked so many federal judges that Obama tried to appoint. And Donald Trump has appointed more federal judges in his first term than any of our last, I think, four presidents. That's very concerning because he's packing typically liberal circuits like the Ninth Circuit, which has a lot of very liberal a lot of liberal cases come through there. And he's packing them with lobbyists and people who cannot answer a question of whether or not Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided.
Dude, like, who wants to talk about federal judges? Like,
it's not sexy at all.
It's boring, man. Mm-hmm. It's boring. And, like, people want to talk about, like, the wild, outrageous politics, and, like, the boring politics on the national level is the thing that's going to, like, decide people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it's going to, like, influence the economy, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to do, man. I'm glad we had this week of not seeing anything because I think it's helped me figure out a little bit more what's noise and what's signal, right? Like, what is actually worth paying attention to in the news? Because you can get distracted by a lot of things that are just blips on the radar. They're just static. They're just noise. They're out there to distract you and to grab your attention. And they're not what you need to know in order to make an informed decision.
Absolutely. This has been a really long conversation.
Yeah, I've had a blast.
I have too, I'm not going to lie. And I'm sure there will be far more of these to come. Everett's an interesting dude. I hope you think the same.
Of course.
Great having this conversation.
It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. You want to take us out?
All right, yeah. You did the intro, I'll do the outro. I'm so excited for the next 4 years.
Oh, definitely.
And for having more intellectual conversations and being back in it, producing episodes weekly and distributing that. I'm so grateful that the listeners came on here and gave us their time of day and gave us, like, their very valuable time.
Absolutely.
Since it's a busy time of year to think about this stuff with us. You can catch me. I mean, I'll probably...
Yeah, plug your stuff. Yeah. I'll plug mine.
Yeah, Young Democracy News. Look up Young Democracy on Instagram and on iTunes and Spotify.
Yep.
Leave a rating. Leave a comment. I read all of them. I think about ways to make the show better. Yep. I'm just super grateful. I'm super excited. That's all I got.
And if you want to check our podcast out, it's the Debate Without Debate podcast on pretty much every single platform, minus Instagram. On Instagram, it is the DWD podcast. If you want to see visual content, we're recording this right now with the visuals. You can find clips on there. If you'd like to be on our podcast, just make sure to email us. I'm sure that's the same for Everett. You can find his email in the link of this podcast as well. It's been a pleasure, dude. Signing off until next week.
Yeah. Good night.
Peace.